Coming at you live from WRIR Studios, we bring you the Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards. And today is Monday. The Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. It's another incredibly gorgeous day that tends to make me think I'm at the beach, and it's just because of that clear, clean breeze that we have gotten, I swear, every day for the last 35 days, even when it was going to rain. So I'm grateful. I hope you are too, because you know what's waiting for us. And on that note, I'm going to welcome today's co-host, Phil Woledo, editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper and co-founder of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and a number of other things that go on around Richmond. Phil, welcome to the show once again.
Thanks, Anna. Glad to be here.
As I use my best, you know, radio voice on you. We're going to have a chat. I think today is one of those days when you're going to talk about the newspaper, and we're going to sort of bring people up to speed on some of the things that have been going on. And it's been quite a month, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And it's one of those times when I wish we were still at least a monthly.
Yeah.
So we've been thinking about some ways to try to bridge the gap between issues, which now come out every 3 months, and the next issue will be out by the end of this month, June. But there has been an awful lot happening that we would like to report about.
That's right. That's right. It's now June, and one of the things that we look forward to is the Juneteenth program, which happens in the middle of the month, produced by the Elegba Folklore Society. There are other Juneteenth programs that go on as well, and so, of course, we'll try to identify some of those things. But that's the longest-running annual program. And in August, there is an Ancestor Day at the Richmond African Burial Ground, which is, it'll be the second annual Ancestor Day, and that'll be on August 30th or the last, no, I'm sorry, I'm confusing the two. That will be the last Sunday of October. But August 30th is the anniversary of the rebellion led by Gabriel and his cohorts back in 1800. And so that's a date that we honor here, as well as October 10th, which is this year will make our, I think, 9th annual commemoration of Gabriel's Rebellion and the struggle to reclaim Richmond's African burial ground. October 10th, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In August is also the Down Home Family Reunion and the Black Freedom Weekend and Happily Natural Day. And that's just, you know, some of the things that we tend to annually participate in or be a part of that we'll be talking about in the months to come. As Phil reminded me, we want to thank and acknowledge our engineers because they just rock every single week. We wouldn't be on the air without them, and that's Jay, and this week is Gabby. So thank you both very much.
And we should mention that Gabby Schwartz is one of the 30 people who were arrested on the steps of the Capitol, state Capitol, in March, protesting the vicious anti-women legislation that was coming down through the General Assembly.
That's right.
And
still coming through.
She's one of the women who spent many hours handcuffed in a bus, handcuffed with the hands behind their backs, unable to use a restroom or get water, and after the men had been long released. Just another example of how the state, through the police, was attempting to humiliate women both through the legislation and through the use of the police.
So still happening.
Still happening.
So tell me.
And thank you for all those people who have come out to support them, forcing the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office to scramble to try to downgrade the charges and offer dismissals and present suggested deals in order to get themselves off the hot seat of also appearing to be anti-women, which, right. Of course, their prosecution demonstrates that they are.
It's true. And, you know, there was I saw a post on Facebook where someone said they went back to the Capitol steps and plopped themselves on them and stayed there and didn't move for quite a while, and no one asked her to leave. No one bothered her. It doesn't seem to actually be illegal to hang out on the Capitol steps.
Yeah, I went to the last court hearing, which was to consider the defense attorney's motion for that the charges be dismissed. And it wasn't exactly a trial, but it was pretty close. And it turns out there are no rules or regulations against sitting on the steps. It was pretty clear the whole thing came down to just an arbitrary decision by those who issue the permits that they on their own decided that this was inappropriate. And also, according to the head of the state of the Capitol Police detail for that day, that the Capitol Police had not requested the state police to come in their SWAT unit, had not requested them to come. And they came, of course, in a SWAT unit with military-style uniforms and at least semi-automatic weapons.
Right.
I'm not sure if they were semi-automatic or automatic weapons. In what was obviously just an attempt to intimidate the women, and the prosecution tried to spin that the Capitol Police had responsibility for safety and order and so on and so forth, and the judge said, well, if they hadn't prepared, then people might have criticized them. But the defense attorneys pointed out that when the gun rights advocates assembled on Capitol grounds armed, there was no backup plans if those advocates had decided to perhaps demonstrate their proficiency.
Right, with their firearms.
With their firearms.
Yeah, it reminds me of the fact that in all of these battles for permits to march or to demonstrate that have gone through so many troubles, particularly May Day and some of the later requests to have marches, is that there's always this pushback where they say that we would like you to hire off-duty policemen, and they usually say we want you to hire at least two, you know, to handle a march that might be 500 people long, it might be more. And so in that instance, they're basically saying that two off-duty police officers should be able to handle whatever goes on. And yet in this instance where you had a group of people protesting legislation, obviously peaceful, declared peaceful, they felt it necessary to pull out the riot gear. And it reminded me very much of the demonstration, one of the first that I ever participated in Richmond, which actually was in Chesterfield County at the library there, which was the NAACP calling a demonstration to the NAACP.
It was actually Bishop Glenn.
Bishop Glenn. Okay, but yeah. I remember at that time, it was my first demonstration, and the presence that I recognized was the NAACP, and then the anarchists and folks from Food Not Bombs. But that was to protest a hate group holding its meeting there, and there were 700 to 800 people who attended that protest, and the state police were there. I had never seen them before at that point, and they were all there in riot gear, including snipers on rooftops. So it was quite a remarkable demonstration that seems to always be focused on people demonstrating for human rights and against oppressive or repressive legislation. And that becomes very much something that we need to factor into the way that we talk about things and the way that we understand the way that these laws are now coming down seemingly unhindered.
Yeah, and I think we also have to realize that what's going on here in Richmond in terms of the massive police presence in October 31st, when the police department swept out Occupy Richmond from Kanawha Plaza, The clearing of Monroe Park when the Wingnut Collective and other advocates for the homeless were having an encampment, and they came with helicopters and fire trucks for, yeah, you know, what, a dozen people.
Right.
And the, you know, the attempts to force organizers of protest marches to hire off-duty police officers, the extremely heavy-handed, intimidating presence of the police at the women's rights protest, not only that particular day, but in previous days around that the legislation, that this is all part of a national trend that we've seen. The recent protests in Chicago, the week of May 19th, May 20th, and there, when NATO was holding its summit conference, and the new mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, former chief of staff for President Obama, tried to basically eliminate the ability to march, and that there was beaten back, and some 15,000 people came out. But I think we're going into a period where we are going to face a greater police presence and greater challenges. And the reason, I believe, is that the 1% of this country is looking to what's going on in Europe and throughout the world, where protests are rising against austerity programs and unemployment and poverty, the Arab Spring. And they're preparing, and they're also thinking about what will happen when they continue this austerity program, whether it will be Obama or Romney who become the next president. They're both going to do the same thing, because the needs of capitalism, which is the overall system we live under, and these right. are both capitalist parties, so they're not about to.
And capitalism is in crisis, and so basically we're looking at a hunkering down to protect capitalism.
That's right. That's right. There's a wonderful cartoon from the 30s of a barrel marked capitalism, and the barrel is falling apart. So this gigantic god of war is putting these iron rings around the barrel to hold it in place, and the rings are marked fascism. We're not going to fascism. That's a mass movement. We're going to a police state.
Right.
And we're going to have to really take that into consideration.
Right. This is when, you know, you really do have to pay attention to history. Pick it up and take a look, because the precursors are there. And usually, you know, the way that they're doing it. I was talking with a friend this morning about really, it's kind of a constant rising tidal wave of crime shows that are on television now. And the plot lines of almost all nighttime television programming is crime-based. Even the daytime soap operas, which used to be all focused on, you know, interfamily dynamics and, you know, love triangles and stuff like that, even they're incorporating kidnappings and terrorism and crime into their storylines in such a way as to keep people, I think, really in a state of ready to fear. Just, we're ready to fear. Whatever happens on the news each day is another sort of layer of building a psychology where we are ready to fear and therefore ready to be reactive and ready to, you know, to be more defensive as opposed to thinking proactively and being thoughtful. Mm-hmm. It's really about gearing your psyche up to simply be reactive. And that becomes really problematic, because then you're looking at the best possible opportunities for police abuse, because people are going to be, they're just going to turn to the authorities and they're going to turn to power structures instead of thinking creatively. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're looking at why there hasn't been a sufficient pushback against the passage of the NDAA Act that includes detention of United States citizens almost without cause of any kind.
Suspicion of supporting terrorism.
Suspicion of supporting terrorism,
right.
Which can mean having a conversation.
Which is interesting, because one of the right-wing Republican state legislators here characterized one of the local anarchist groups as a terrorist organization. You know, to the media. So,
right.
But, you know, on the other hand, you know, the state's doing this because they're feeling insecure. And I think one of the most hopeful things was the way that the new wave of young activists has reacted to this repression.
I agree.
When the police swept into Kanawha Plaza, I believe there were one or two arrests in the plaza, and then everybody else was pushed across the street. And as people stood there and watched the police tearing down what they had spent months putting together, 13 of them crossed the street and basically defied the police and were arrested. They wanted to show that they felt that strongly about it.
Mm-hmm.
The women who and men, the 17 women and 13 men who were arrested on the state capitol, despite what they went through, some of those women were on the bus as long as 9 hours, handcuffed behind their backs, unable to go use a bathroom, clearly just an attempt to humiliate and torture them. They all stuck together. And they were back on other demonstrations, and I think that it shows that that this new generation of activists that came out of the Occupy movement has some substance, and they're being hardened in the struggle, and the police are schooling them in the realities of the role of the state, the role of the police, the role of the courts, the role of the prisons, and that rather than backing off, they are taking on that challenge and moving in new directions and becoming more well-rounded, sensitive revolutionaries. So be careful of what you repress, because it might come down and bite you in the butt.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's the cue to let you know that you are listening to The Defenders Live here on 97.3 LPFM. It's WRIR, and you can listen live on WRIR.org today, and I believe tomorrow it is rebroadcast on Tuesdays at 11 and 2 p.m. online only. If you want to learn more about the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, please visit our website at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. We, Phil and I are having our tri-monthly.
Well, we usually do this after the paper comes out.
We usually do, right. But today was a good day to step in and bring, you know, a little conversational enlightenment to some of the things that we've been following. And, you know, the issue of police repression is one that is becoming a constant focus. June 17th, the NAACP is calling for in New York, I believe, is calling for a stop and frisk protest. And it's a real call on the Black community to take to task the growing problem. We've talked about racial profiling for years, and there have been organizations in Virginia that have focused on that particular issue, like the Virginia Organizing and I think RPEC, Richmond Peace Education Center, and some others have done the same. And it's one of those issues that, of course, folks who are trying to organize and who are really trying to get people mobilized in the community are really coming together around this issue of stop and frisk. And I think the description is gaining prevalence because of the way that it impacts the immigrant population, as well as traditionally the African American population. And I think depending on where you are in the United States, you're going to look at what was the population and typically the population of color that was repressed at certain points, and you will find stop and frisk being stopped while brown or of color was the norm and has been the norm and at different points. But with the emphasis on the repressive legislation that's been passed in places like Arizona and Alabama and in Virginia, this is becoming a much broader-based issue that may be one of the forces that actually brings people together in a way that we haven't seen in a while. One of the cases, in talking about police repression is we have been following here is the case of Ashley Williams. And she is the young mother who was, in essence, coerced into pleading guilty to being responsible for the starvation death of her 2-year-old son in 2009, I believe.
2009. Yes.
Yeah, and the state of the case now is it's a very interesting kind of limbo for her to be in. She's decided the counsel that she actually wants, and the court is at this point supposed to decide whether or not she can choose her own counsel because of who that counsel is, and then whether or not she'll be able to get a new trial. Based on evidence that was not that was prevented from being presented in her previous trial. You want to talk a little bit about that? I think you've been following it very closely and have been organizing some of the court watch in relation to this case.
Yeah, this is This is sort of a Richmond's Trayvon Martin case, in that someone has come under attack by, in this case, the court system, and could and be sent to prison for as long as 45 years for a crime that she did not commit. And it's important that people are coming forward to try to support her. Ashley Williams is a 27-year-old single mother from Fulton, a neighborhood in Richmond. Has four children. One of them was not thriving and was losing weight, and was taken to the doctor, taken to the emergency room. Social service has been out. None of those agencies or individuals raised any alarm or suggestion that the child was not being properly cared for. But at the age of 2 years, Deshaun Williams died, and he, at the time, he weighed just 14 pounds, which is much less than the average for a 2-year-old at that age, which is somewhere between 25 and 30 pounds. Before the autopsy had been completed and the cause of death had been determined, the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, under the leadership of Michael Herring, brought charges of second-degree homicide against Ashley Williams and felony child neglect. And then because the actual determination from the medical examiner's office as to the cause of death wasn't going to be issued before the period in which Ashley Williams, as a defendant, had a right to a speedy trial. I hope people follow that. They withdrew the charges and then waited for the medical examiner's report. When the medical examiner's report came back, it listed the cause of death as undetermined.
Yeah.
They could not determine a cause of death. And yet, the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, again, reinstated the charges. There was two court-appointed attorneys. One was Pauline Ewald, and one was Davika Davis. It would take a little while to go into all the details of it, but basically Pauline Ewald was preparing a very competent defense, including a testimony by expert witnesses that there was no evidence of child neglect, and that instead Deshaun appeared to have a genetic disease called DiGiorno's disease, which makes it impossible for the body to process food and therefore lose weight, and it simulates malnutrition or starvation, but
it's a disease that causes basically a starvation of the body. But
before the case could go to court, Ms. Ewald was taken off the case by Chief Circuit Judge Richard Taylor, and the remaining court-appointed attorney, Ms. Davis, apparently convinced Ms. Williams that she had no case. She should plead guilty to a so-called lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter, which itself, it turns out, carries up to 40 years in prison. Ms. Davis pleaded guilty and was going to go away to prison until the NAACP, under the leadership of King Salam Kalfani, stepped in, was able to get an interview with Ms. Williams with the assistance of Saad Al-Amin, former city councilman,
mm-hmm.
Ms. Williams now wants to withdraw. She wants Pauline Ewald to come back on the case as her private attorney and to withdraw her guilty plea and go to court. There was supposed to be a hearing today to rule on the motion to bring back Ms. Ewald as attorney. That was listed on the Virginia court case information website, but as it turns out, that is being done by email. And we should know by later this afternoon the date for that next court hearing. The Coalition for Justice, which is a longtime coalition in the black community, the NAACP and the defenders are calling on the public, the community, to come out for that court hearing and support Ms. Williams' right to her counsel of her choice. Mm-hmm. If she doesn't get it, the case will go back to Judge Taylor for sentencing.
Right.
So this is a very important time. Please Keep an eye on the defender's website, defendersfje.org, for the date of that hearing, which we should find out later today.
That's right. That's right. Thank you for bringing those details to the case, because it is kind of a complicated situation. And the main thing will be that people stay tuned to find out when that hearing date is going to be and then make room on their calendar to attend. It's very important. These court watch opportunities do have an impact. At the very least, it lets people know, it lets the authorities know that people are not isolated. And that is a very important piece to have on your side, to know that you do not stand alone in these circumstances. So, Phil, I want to, if you could just remind folks when the newspaper is going to be coming out.
We're scheduled to come out the last Thursday of the month, of June. Mm-hmm. Folks know that we're an all-volunteer paper. And if some of us get jobs in between now and then, I mean, I'm self-employed, so I have to take the jobs when they come up. And so it could be pushed back another week, but right now it'll be the last Thursday of June. And we do need help with distribution. So if anybody would like to volunteer to pass out the paper in their neighborhood, 644-5834, 644-5834. The number again to call is
644-5834. All right. Very good. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And just to remind folks that you can go to defendersfje.blogspot for these updates, as well as defendersliveradio.blogspot.com for any information related to the programs that you hear here.
We're just blogging all over them.
That's right. But it's working. It's working. So I just want to, again, thank my listeners for tuning in today. I'd like to throw in that if you are environmentally inclined, there will be a free movie at Birdhouse Market tomorrow night after the market called Vanishing of the Bees. I understand that it was very well received when it played at the Science Museum last year. And this will be an evening outdoors where you can just hang out and enjoy a film and enjoy a potluck.
Will this be on the Birdhouse Market IMAX screen?
Yeah, exactly. It's called Sheet on a Playground. So if you are interested in learning more about that event and other events happening around town that we have on our sites, just, again, visit the defendersfje.blogspot.com, defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. And I want to thank you once again for tuning in to the Defenders Live, and look forward to talking to you next week. Keep up the struggle, and remember that kindness does matter. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.